Today is May 23rd, 2009. This is Conduit. Panel is Bob Defendi and Dan Willis on writing.
I have written four books for Wizards of the Coast under two of their different imprints, all Dragonlance books, one for their, two or three for their young adult line, which they subsequently canceled. I did write the book that sold out. Of all the books they wrote, one of them sold out as much. So I feel good about that. Well, I feel good about that except every other week when I get some, 10-year-old boy going, please, where did I get this book? If you want to pay $60 on eBay, I'm sorry. There's nothing I can do for you. There's people like, well, do you have any? I have two. Thank you very much. Yeah. I've also written for their regular adult Dragonlance line. Book that came out last November. For some reason, I didn't get out of my bag. Put it up in the front. Show off my cool book. And somehow I managed to get some of the best covers they have in Dragonlance. I'm blessed that way. So the book that sold out had the best cover in that line. But I've been a professional writer for the last 6 or 8 years, something like that. Like I said, published four books, had plenty of books turned down too, so I know all about that. Bob, who usually is here with me, is one Writers of the Future. We've taught writing classes together for 3, 4, or 5 years now. We used to talk about structure and other such things. Bob is really the structure. If I'm good, he's better. So it's important that he's not here. I've been around in the publishing world. There's people who have been around more, so there may be things I don't know. I really can't. So I don't know what they pitched this class as. So,
just the general on writing.
Just general on writing. Okay. So, that being the case, I'll just turn it over to you guys about what you guys want to know about being a writer. Or about writing, or about editing, or about manuscripts, or anything else you want to know about. Nobody wants to know anything.
First. Sure. Read it attempts. How often? And how is your process of thinking about it?
Okay, what I do is I will write a chapter. I usually write a chapter a day when I'm writing full time. That's just my personal metric. If I'm not writing full time, it's like 1,000 to 1,500 words a day, depending on how much time I actually have. And I then at the end of the chapter, before I start the next chapter, I will go back and I will revise. That is usually a revision for flow, voice, and technical editing such as spelling, punctuation, things like that. I use Microsoft Word. I know a lot of people don't like Microsoft Word. I really don't care. It works just fine for me. But I'm using the Mac version. Microsoft actually has a really good Mac division. They make some of the best Mac software out there. It's weird. So it usually catches my grammatical problems. And I've been writing long enough and reading long enough, I don't usually run into grammatical problems. My biggest problem is passive voice, which I tend to fall into. There are usually not a lot of spelling and punctuation errors. Spelling errors are going to be more like where I've typed form instead of from. And you just go through and look for things like that. I also look for, this sentence is clunky, that kind of thing. It's that kind of an edit. What I will then do is before I submit, I will go back and do an in mass. I will read everything I'm submitting. If it's a proposal, at 3 chapters. If it's the whole book, it's the whole book. And I'll just take a red pen with me, or just any colored pen. Use a color. See, black ink against white and black text sometimes disappears. That's a real comma. No, that's my mark. I use purple just because somebody handed me a purple pen in the book signing. For the exact same reason I signed the book, and it was black. Like, this looks like printing in the book. Give me a colored pen. So I've used purple ever since because somebody handed me a purple pen. But kind of my thing. I'm weird. Don't do it. Anyway, take a colored pen so you can see your marks. And I'll go back and I'll go through it again. And what I'm going through it for at this point is continuity and such. Now, let me back up because I extensively outline. The last book I wrote had an 80-page outline, 50-page outline. Excuse me. I've had 80-page outlines, and if you do that, your continuity is probably going to be pretty good because I know every chapter I take the outline, I'll just go through and draw a line. Chapter 1 ends there, this is chapter 2, chapter 2 ends there, and when I'm going through, a lot of times what I'll do when I start writing is I'll actually take that outline and expand it, and that'll tell me what I'm writing today. If you have a situation where your writing work is split into two times, you can do a little in the morning, a little at night, perfect opportunity, something like that. So I'm actually usually pretty much on in terms of, did I hit all the things I have to hit so I tell the story I want to tell? But if you don't outline, this is where you're going to want to go through and make sure, oh, that's right, I mentioned that his brooch was red, which is important for later in the story. If you don't know the brooch is red, it doesn't make any sense. I'm just pulling stuff out of the air, obviously. But that's where you look for those kinds of things, because you're now able to see the story as a whole. That's all the editing I do. I don't do any more because I have seen too many people who edit to death. They'll fix it, and they'll fix it, and they'll fix it again. It's like those people that get plastic surgery too many times. You know, after you've edited a certain amount, stop. Otherwise, you get, you know, Frankenstein. That's what professional editors are for. And if you're having trouble because you're just your work isn't, your punctuation, your spelling, the technicals aren't up to snuff, get a professional editor. Stacy Whitman is here. She's a professional editor. She knows other people who will be more than happy for, you know, a fee to go through your work and mark it up. Stacy actually edited my third book. She did a tremendous job. She turned a good book into a great book. And that's where real good editors are for. But as you go through your revisioning, don't overdo it. At some point, just stop. It'll never be perfect. I'm sure, in fact, I know, I've gone through books I've gone through printed books of mine and gone, oh, that's terrible. How did that get in there? You know, it happens. I've also gone through that, wow, that's better than I remember. So it works both ways. But the real trick is at some point you get a professional editor to look at your work. If you have an agent, that's what your agent is for. Send it to your agent, they'll go, oh, this is terrible. Have this edited. Or it's like my agent does, you know what, this idea is good, but I don't think it's marketable right now. I've had a bunch of those from my agent recently. The market's a little tight right now, so I'm not judging him. It's just, it's been rough. But once you get professionally edited, you'll get back a manuscript that looks like it's been bled on. I once had one come back as Mark of a Green Pen, with Mr. Spock as well. But either way, you'll get back something that, and this is the point in your writing where it separates the women from the girls, the men from the boys. This is where you're looking at your baby, and somebody has massacred it. And you've got to go through and go, yeah, that sentence is really terrible. I need to take it out, or this is redundant, or I didn't explain this at all, or I didn't describe this. And who here attended Howard's lecture yesterday, his main address? This is exactly the point that Howard was talking about. This is the point where you're going to be challenged on your writing skills. And you have two choices, man up, or woman up, and fix it, or get defensive and say, my work is perfect, I just don't understand. I'll give you two guesses about which group gets published, and the first doesn't count.
Speaking of editors, then, who are blood over your manuscript, how do you tell a good editor from a bad editor? As opposed to, this person massacred my baby, and for my own good, or this person massacred my baby, and they want to rewrite it as the way they would have written it.
Let me tell you the only way. And that is to either know them or know somebody who knows them. Finding an editor out of a phone book works, but you it's like a box of chocolates then. You don't know what you're going to get. And that's why you come to things like this. Stacy is really busy right now, but it's a tight economy. She's probably willing to take on a lot more work. And if she gets to the point where she isn't, she knows other people in the biz. She's able to say, this person will do a good job for you, or that person. You come to things like this to network. You don't have a manuscript now, and you're not going to have one for 6 months because it's going to take you that long to get it finished. Get Stacy's card. Get her email address. Get my email address. I mean, authors know agents, too, although I don't know that many. I work with one house, so Stacy is my agent, or my editor, and I have one other. But two others. I'm forgetting people now. But yeah, talk to people in the biz. Come to things like this. Meet them and get recommendations. That's a great way to do it, because you're going to find somebody probably who isn't an idiot. And like for instance, Stacy, I recommend her because I have worked with her. I've seen what she's done. Talk to James Dashker. His book, The Maze Runner, that's being published by Random House, was edited by Stacy. In fact, it was when he first told me the story, I went, it's not going to sell, dude. And turns out, it was extensively rewritten based on Stacy's recommendations. So she's very good at what she does. She's not alone. There are a lot of editors out there who will do it.
So are there any telltale signs you can see in the editing itself that lets you know that you got dud or a gem?
It's hard as an author because we tend to be too close to the mystery. We know what we've written and we love what we've written. A lot of times I'll go through an edit and I'll go, okay, I see that. Oh yeah, I see that. But sometimes I go, I don't know why they want me to change this. But my job is to trust the editor. I'll go through and change it anyway. I had my agent, I sent him a book once, and he said, you know, I really like this book, but the ending's kind of weak. Can you rewrite the ending? I have to rewrite the last half of the book. And it turns out that book didn't get sold. It got shopped around and it was sold, unfortunately. But that happens. And I didn't think the ending was weak, but he did, and so I ended up giving him what he wanted. So I think that it was a stronger book in hindsight for that. But hindsight's usually pretty good about that. But it's hard a lot of times when you're in the midst of working to be objective. And again, that's what you need an editor for. You need a dispassionate third party who's willing to go, you know what, that whole chapter. Like my first book, the editor axed 15 running pages. Because I had this group of people who were trudging through the mountains and they were in the process of starving and freezing to death. Because they were unprepared. And they didn't know they were unprepared. It's a bunch of snot-nosed kids. It was a YA book. A bunch of snot-nosed kids who were running away from a really, really nasty bad guy and had run into the mountains. And they were in the process of dying. And I spent 15 pages describing their despair as they build to this one point where they get basically rescued. Or they get captured and then they get rescued. By a woodsman who basically looks at them and goes, what are you people doing here? He turned out to be one of everyone's favorite characters in the whole series. But I wrote two more books that had him in it. Well, one more had him in it. Someone else wrote two more books that had him in it. But they just decided, you know what? We get it. They're starving to death and freezing to death. We don't have to drag the reader through 15 pages of this. You know what? I went, okay, go on. Delete. That was, you know, I tell you that, and you're like, wow, how do you take 15 running pages out of a book? There's too much in there. Yeah, it really wasn't. But that's the thing. And when you're close to the material, you're like, well, I need to describe their despair and their, you know, the fact they're up against things they've never seen before. And she's like, no, you really don't. And she does this for a living. Yeah. So I took her word for it, and sure, it was a better book. A short answer, and if you haven't figured this out, short answers for me are not easy. Is get a recommendation. Find someone you know, find someone they know. You know, stay connected. And you probably are. Now, back to editing. I'm trying to remember where we were. Oh, just when you get it back from the editor, you do what they tell you. And at that point, you're probably done. That's the point where the editor's either going to accept your edit or they're going to just push back and say, we need to change some more stuff. The trick. This has nothing to do with editing, but this is what you really need to know. This has been said in two or three panels I've been in and on. You want to be the person that is easy to work with. Change this, no problem. You hate this character, delete him from the book, no problem. Yeah. We won't take your name off the book, no problem. But yeah, it happened to me. The new YA books, the old YA books I had my name on, the new YA books that they're doing, are all under a pseudonym. Different authors under a pseudonym. Like, do you want to write one? I mean, the whole point of writing for this company that doesn't pay me very well is to have my name on the cover. So that when I shop around to Tor and Daw and other places like that, I can go, see? Me. And they go, yeah, this guy writes books. And if I had somebody else's name on the cover, it's not quite as impressive. So anyway, be the guy that's easy to work with. Be the guy that makes deadlines. If you get somebody who wants to see your work and they want it by Friday, get it to them by Friday. You know, move heaven and earth if you have to. I've only missed one deadline for this book. I was 2 weeks late because I had something like 90 days left to turn it in. And they said, we're cutting, we want it 2 months early. So I had 90 days worth of work left to do because I had timed it pretty close. And they cut 2 months out of my time. So I was, that ended up being 2 weeks late. But it was not my problem. I was like, well, deadlines move all the time. I'm like, well, you're just going to have to accept the fact it's going to be late because I'm well, budgeted my time, and I don't have any. So I didn't like the answer, but it was the only one I could give him. But, and most authors do turn their books late. So if you're the guy that turns in books early or on time, they'll love that. If you're the guy that's easy to work with, they say, we want to fix this, we want to change this, we want you to rewrite the whole book. And if you're the guy that's easy to work with, they will come back and work with you again. If you're the guy that's hard to work with, and your book doesn't sell well, they're probably done with you. So if you're hard to work with and your book is a bestseller, they'll still work. They're not that good.
It's a question. You got an editor, and you're making the changes, and then you're going to your agent, and they go, hey, I want to make some changes, and then the editor at the publisher wants to do it again.
Of course. That happens.
And you end up back where you were.
Most of the time, you're talking about changes that aren't terribly substantive. This book I ended up rewriting, there was a character they didn't like, and so I took her completely out. She was the main character's mother-in-law, her mother, and she was the nagging, annoying person who was the ball and chain around his neck. And she died a really satisfying death in the book. It's kind of freed him up. But they decided they didn't like her. So she ends up getting killed in the third chapter now. She still needed to be there because that explained a lot about his personality, the fact that he was very deferential and took care of his mother, and yet she was such a jerk.
Well, the leap of pulling him off might be better. Huh?
Yeah, well, that's the point. I ended up having to extract her from the whole book, and she was integral to the plot. So I ended up doing a lot of rewriting on this. But you know what? That's the way it is sometimes. And it's the only time in my published works where I've had to do that level of revision. Usually it's okay, this sentence doesn't work, or, you know, this paragraph doesn't work, this scene doesn't work, fix these things. And some of it will be general. This scene doesn't work, fix it. You need to have more of this character, less of that character. You know, very general. A lot of it is technical stuff, because all the technical editing you do, you will still miss spelling errors, punctuation errors, run-on sentences, sentence fragments. You'll miss something. It happens.
Well, yeah, it's more what I'm referring to is their personal preference. You end up going through three layers and everybody wants to change something.
Absolutely.
That you've already changed once.
It will happen, and it's the price you pay. There's nothing you can do about it except go, I mean, either that or not right. If you don't want to be published, don't deal with it. But if you want to be published, you got to go, yes, sir, may I have another?
You mentioned you had a problem with passive sometimes. Mm-hmm. You catch that in your edits, or do you let them catch it?
I didn't even know what passive was. So you have a problem with passive, I had to Google it. Passive, of course, is, you know, when you're describing something and it's to be and was and things like that. Like I tell you something, take all the was's out of your book, which is almost impossible to do because was is also a descriptor. But he was tall. How do you grow the was out of that sentence? But you can, but it's after a while you start to sound funny when you do that. But I now know what I'm looking for, and so it becomes easier for me to catch. But still, it's part of my pattern. That's my version of literary, is the passive voice to be very, it's kind of erudite. So I got to work on that, and I spent the last year really working on my characterization, voice, all that stuff, because I realized that my writing is up to a certain level, and I need to take my game up to the next level. And what you end up doing is looking at your work and trying to figure out what the problems are and how to fix them. And it's a colossal pain in the neck, but it pays off, as anybody who was in Howard's lecture knows. That was what Howard's lecture was all about. Did that answer your question?
Yep. Have you done how many books?
I've published 4. I've written probably 10.
Okay. So, are you seeing less feedback from the editors now that you're progressing?
Actually, more. This book had more feedback than any other, different editor, so that may have something to do with it. This is also not a YA book, which my other three were, so there may be something to that as well. I don't know that that's an indicator of anything, because like I said, different editor, different preferences, different storytelling style, could mean one of them. I wouldn't read too much into that. If you get an editor who just crucifies your work, as long as they still like it, you're good. If you get an editor that gives you, you know, stall spelling errors, you know, you got like one mark per page, and it's just, oh, you missed a comma here. That's probably not a very good editor, actually, but if you think your work is perfect, you have a problem. What else? Yes?
With books that you write that either don't end up getting published or ones get cut up a lot or changed a lot, do you ever have trouble letting go of the original? Like, later on I'll do something with this, or I'll get this release
I sent an idea to my agent about 3 years ago, and he hated it. And so I took that idea, put it on the shelf, I came back to it, rewrote it entirely, kept the character names the same, and part of the setting was the same. Sent it back to him and said, I've seen this before, I didn't like it then. I don't know that he even looked at it. So, yeah, that happens every once in a while. In fact, the story I'm writing now is a YA steampunk story that is a direct ripoff of a Star Wars fan film I wrote back years and years ago. Because I was a computer programmer, this is right after Phantom Menace came out, a bunch of Star Wars fan films were appearing, which were excuses for programmers to show off how cool they could do lightsaber effects, and some of them were doing a really good job. And I made that complaint to a buddy of mine who was on my programming team. He said, well, you're a writer, smart guy. Why don't you write a real fan film with a plot? And so I did. It was 80 pages in script format, which, if you know anything about script format, is a full-length movie. So never got me. But I've always loved the story. It's a great story. And so I've stolen it villainously to make this steampunk story. It's the same story. It's got the same characters and everything. It's just set in a different place. It happens. We recycle a lot of things. The trick is to not get into the thing where you're writing the same book for 10 years. I mean, if you've been in this community long enough, you've met somebody who can write the same story their whole life. The trick is finish it, promote it. If nobody wants it, put it on the shelf and move on. There's no such thing as a wasted book. Because, I mean, Brandon Sanderson sold his 6th book, and he was writing his 13th book at the time. So it tells you something. You know, the old saying, your first million words are practice. Well, that means something. You've got to put the time in before you're good enough to sell a book. And if you manage to sell your first book, it happens. Gone with the Wind, I think, was that gal's first book. It was her only book. I think it took her 20 years to write it, too. So it's one of those things where, you know, did she write a sequel for that? Did she write the sequel? She didn't write that. Someone else wrote that. Okay, there you go. It happens. You know, it's not out of the realm of possibilities. Just assume if you want to do this for a living, for a career, or even as a serious hobby, which in this market might be the only option, you're going to have to write, you know, the old saying, write every day. You have to write every day. You're going to have to go, if you can produce 3 books a year, knock yourself out. If you can't do 2, if you can't do 1, that'd be able to do 1 book a year. You know, you don't have to, also, for first books, you know, they're not looking for a 150,000 word novel in your first book. 100,000 words max for your first book. Maybe 125 if you're writing epic fantasy. But if you're writing anything but epic fantasy, 75 to 100,000 words is just fine. Because that's a long YA book or a short adult book. And they don't mind short. So, and because they print to page quotas anyway. So as long as you're over 75,000 words on a novel, you're probably fine. So write, you know, don't burden yourself. I'm going to be Robert Jordan. I'm going to write 1,000 page novel. I can't even imagine writing. I don't think that's not true. But I've written enough words now that I probably could fill a Robert Jordan book in terms of what I published. But I can't imagine. And Brandon Sanders talking about 350,000 words for this. I'm like, that's insane. Well, that's just the
book. For
all 3 books. Yeah, that's my point. Is 350,000 words, and you've got 3 books to do that. That's just nuts. But epic fantasy readers expect that. They expect big fiction. You know, they don't mind reading Ursula Le Guin and seeing all the description where she describes every rock and tree as they travel across an entire continent. That bores me to death. But the epic fantasy readers eat it up. So, you know, if that's your thing, you got an audience. My point, I guess, is you know, don't burden yourself with writing a big, huge, awesome novel when you're writing for practice. Just write a book, finish it. If you've got somebody you can send it off to, an agent, an editor, anybody who knows you, send it off, see what they think. While they're thinking, write something else. Because Bob Defendi, if you were here, would tell you that he's had a book, a sci-fi book, at Bain for 2 years now. And it's still sitting on some editor's desk. He still wants to read it, but he hasn't gotten around to it. It happens. You know, your books will just sit there and sit there and sit there. And you just gotta move on. If you're waiting for that, if that's the one book that's gonna save your whatever, and you know it's the one, you can waste an awful lot of time waiting for somebody to pick it up. Or you could be improving your craft so your next book is better my next book is always better than the one I'm writing. I want to have it. So, because I get better if I pay attention.
You write one at a time, or do you
I only write one at a time. I'm way too ADD to write more than one at a time. If I tried writing more than one at a time, nothing would ever get better. I'm also a burst writer. I tend to, once I get my world in line and my outline done and my character bios done and all the rest of that stuff that goes with the backstory, I will sit down and go, okay, go, and I'll do a chapter a day until it's done. And I do only work 5 days a week when I do that. Yeah, I find out if I push it to 6 days, I get mental exhaustion and I'm useless for a couple of days the next week. I'll do 3 days and then take a day off and two more days. Take a day off. And usually what I'll do is I'll work, and once I'm done working, I'll go watch a movie or something. I'll get up in the morning, watch another movie, just decompress the brain and then go. Because that's a pretty intensive process for me. You know, other people, Bob Effendi can write while watching television. I don't know how he does it. I can never do that. My brain doesn't. I only have one channel in my brain. If I'm using it to watch TV, my typing would. I'd be typing words that have weird letters in them, much less making any sense in terms of the sense structure. Anybody else? Just random questions here and there.
You said that you sometimes have an 80-page outline.
You betcha.
And then you mentioned character bios. Is that part of that, or is that separate? How
That's
much
separate.
Of that do you do
I use,
before the outline?
I use a tool called StoryMill. It's by a company called Mariner Software. It's a very nice organizational tool because it's more like a relational database, and they've got places for you to dump character descriptions, and it's all in one program, so I can actively search for things. It'll search in my story, it'll search in my character bios, it'll search in my outline. All you can put it all in this one tool.
What was the name of it again?
It's called StoryMill by Mariner Software, like the seagoing dog. I also use a tool called Dramatica for outlining and plotting, but I do all my actual work in StoryMill.
Could you go through what you do in that outlining and
yeah.
If you need a whiteboard or whatever, you
yeah.
Give us how you tackle that.
How long does it take you to outline?
It depends. It varies. It really does. Usually the problem with outlining is the intangible stuff. I'm still thinking about this stuff. The steampunk story I'm writing now, called The Flux Engine, is based on an idea I had playing a role-playing game 10 years ago with a buddy of mine. It's unrecognizable as anything that happened during that game, but that's what the seed of the idea came from. And I hadn't written a steampunk story. I hadn't read a steampunk story in a long time. I had to do some research. I had to dig in and find out what's good and what's current in steampunk. What are we doing? And I ended up deciding I'm doing a steampunk story, but it's also an alternate history. It's this Earth. It's just a different 1840. Than we know, and so I do a lot of research in that and look up what are the tropes, what are the usual things people expect to see in the genre, so that I can put them in. And I found out there were things that people usually expect to see that some I didn't agree with. Some like that's just dumb, but they're common, like steam powered prosthesis.
But apparently it's big in the genre. Carrying a steam tank around on you would be something else. So I do the research, and then I take a lot of just very random seeming notes, which are, oh, this character, I'd like to have him do something along this line, or this character, this villain needs to be this kind of a character, or needs to have this kind of a idiosyncrasy, or something like that. And eventually I will sit down and I will create the rough story outline, which is just, what are the major events of the story? What's going to happen? Well, this character's going to go here. This is going to explode, this is going to get stolen, this person is going to get kidnapped, whatever it is. And I'll just create that general outline, which is, again, just it's a free-form, free-thinking thing, and I'll do a lot of this. Okay, that doesn't go there, and you do a lot of filling around like that. And as you start to get a sense of who your characters are, I give them names, I'll write them down, I'll give a basic bio, who they are, what they want, what's their purpose in the story. Anybody who's used Dramatica knows that one of their big things is there are 8 archetypal characters that you must have in all stories for them to feel complete. which I thought was full of crap when I first read it, and I realized as I started looking at fiction that they are absolutely right. For those of you taking notes, the A-type characters are the protagonist, which is a good guy. The antagonist, which is your bad guy. The guardian. The guardian is, and I would like this Star Wars, have you seen it? The guardian is Obi-Wan. The guardian is the old wise character who will be the trainer of the hero. The guardian is almost always ineffective. If the guardian was effective, he wouldn't need the hero. So in Obi-Wan's case, he's old and past his prime. You need a young guy to fill his shoes. And then you have a character that they actually invented a name for, called the Contagonist. The Contagonist is almost, in Star Wars, it's Darth Vader, no one really understands that to get into the depths of it. But the Contagonist represents an obstacle. He isn't the antagonist, he's not the bad guy. He's a lot of times the bad guy's right hand, in this case, Darth Vader. Or a lot of stories, it's the hero's girlfriend. It's the hero or their boyfriend. And the one that says, why are you out saving the world when you should be home? You know, in fact, you remember The Incredibles. You know, Frozone's wife is a antagonist. You know, and my evening's in danger. You're not going out doing any daring do, you know. Well, he's exploding around. That's a antagonist. A antagonist attempts to deflect, bar, or even seduce the hero into not doing whatever it is they have to do to be the hero. That's your primary character block. They're all opposites. Protagonist, antagonist, guardian, antagonist. The guardian, the antagonist, and the antagonist and the protagonist are the opposite pairings. Then you have a secondary character block, which is logic and emotion, and those are opposite pairs. In Star Wars, you have logic, that's Leia, you have emotion, that's Chewie. Chewie, I mean, all his own reactions are all emotional. That's all he has. You know. Leia, obviously logic. Then you have the skeptic, who is, of course, Han Solo. You know, religion is an ancient weapon. And you have faith, or the sidekick, which in Star Wars is the droids. Faith is faith in the main character. Master Luke will say this. That's faith. You have those characters. Now, sometimes you have what they call complex characters, which are they serve more than one role and more than one part of the story. If you want that level of depth conversation, see me sometime. We have a couple of hours. Or better yet, see somebody who really knows this stuff inside out. I know a lot of viewers. But I use Dramatica because it will walk you through plot construction in a way that is very, very regimented. And for an ADD guy like me, I need that. It will say things like, okay, your hero is an intuitive character. You've told him this information, so it's feeding you back. He's Fox Mulder, he's not Monk. Monk is that character is very rational. Whereas Fox Mulder is very intuitive. He looks at something and goes, oh, it's an alien. How did you get that? It just feels like an alien. Oh, that's an intuitive character. Rational character is, oh, I see all the evidence that points to the fact that it's an alien. Usually, male characters are rational and female characters are emotive or intuitive. It is when you get the reverse of that, like the X-Files, that you get these wonderful, memorable characters. You know, Scully was the logic character, and Mulder was the intuitive character, and that tends to be male-female reverse. When you do that, you get these great characters that are memorable and very interesting because you've messed with things. Again, I'm giving you way too much information now. Dramatica is a tool. It's like $300. It's not a cheap tool. It's also arcane. The guys, they really need to hire an interface designer and a writer to go through and make this stuff make sense because it's in education speak. These guys are obviously college professors. And it reads like a college textbook. It's terrible. It took me 5 years to figure out how to use this silly thing. And I was using it all the time. But it's very useful in terms of reminding you that if you have an intuitive character, that he has to have these kinds of problems and these kinds of... What is the story symptom? The story symptom is the part of the story that indicates when you look at your main character, you know what his problem is, or you need to as a reader or a viewer to watch the movie, but he can't know what his problem is. And so the way you figure it out is what's the symptom of this problem? What do you see him doing? It's like, oh, that's why he's not going to be able to do whatever it is in the end of the story. That's where it's going to be his big challenge. And, for Luke in Star Wars, I got to come out of Star Wars just so everybody's seen it, it's the faith thing. You know, in the end of the movie, that's Obi-Wan's, you know, use the Force. Do it my way. Trust me. And the Guardian and the protagonist always have that argument. That's one of the main story through lines is the they call it the impact character.
it's not always the guardian, but whoever it is, it's the guy who's putting up a philosophy to the main character, and the main character is reacting to it. In The Fugitive, you have Dr. What's-His-Name, Kimball, who knows he is innocent. And then you have a Tommy Lee Jones character, who I can't remember his name, who then discovers that he's innocent. So the guy who changes is the impact character. Usually in a hero story like you guys are writing, it's the Luke Obi-Wan, where the guardian character is the impact character, and he knows the right way, and the hero eventually comes along and figures it out. But that's your...
It was a good detour. I enjoyed it.
That's the moment where the main character... Luke's symptom. In the beginning, he's like, black shield down, I can't even see, and all that stuff. It was faith. His problem was faith. So when he went on faith, he was able to succeed. That was the thing he had to overcome. All characters need those things. Dramatica reminds me as a writer that characters need those things. If you write characters without those things, they seem flat. Or they come off, and suddenly at the end, they pull off something that you didn't prepare the reader to expect them to be able to do. You know, you have to set those things up. You have to give your character flaws. Your reader has to understand what they are so that when your character either overcomes them and succeeds or doesn't overcome them and fails, or doesn't overcome them and succeeds, that can happen too, they understand why that happened. And Dramatica is a great tool for keeping you on track with those things because it reminds you, sometimes to the point of pulling your hair out, that you have to have these things for your characters, not just your main character. Your impact character, your guardian, those guys have to have flaws. They have to have weaknesses, because if they don't, then you get these cardboard cutout characters that don't seem real anymore. So I use Dramatica. I use a story mill for the actual work because it allows me to write all my chapters in little chapter files, and then I can print them all at once as a one big book, or I can search them and change and do find replaces in the entire document without having to. Microsoft Word, when I used to work in that, I'd pull up one page or one document per chapter. And then when I wanted to do anything, I had to cut them all into pieces and stick them all in one big document, which made editing fun, because then you have to edit the individual pieces and then reassemble them. So StoryMill helps me with that. Also, it allows me to put all my character notes and stuff like that in one place. But yeah, I'll go through. I have a form. In fact, anybody... Here we go. You can come up and get one of my cards. If you don't know my email address, it's on my card. If you want to email me, I will send you the character forms that I use. I have actually two or three I've used at different points. I have to figure out which one I'm using now. Go back and look and see what my current character form is. But I've got ones that walk you through the basics, like what's your character's name, age, sex, height, eye color, hair color, are they religious, do they practice, do they have quirks, idiosyncrasies, phobias, hobbies. It really breaks down your character into some manageable pieces, and it also puts all that information in front of you. So, and this is why I like StoryMill, because it's all in one program. It's all basically, you open the program, it's all in one file. When I'm in the middle of something, I'm like, I forgot what Bob's hair color is, I can go, characters, click, Bob, click, here's his information. You know, well, Bob is brunette. Okay, good. Now I know. Bob has brown eyes. Bob has whatever Bob's characteristics are, I know, because it's right there in I don't have to open up a different file. I don't have to dig around the paper file. It's all right there. It's really easy. Because my ADD makes it so that I forget things like that. And a character whose hair color changed three times in the course of one book. So I use a character form for that information. If you don't have Stein on Writing by Sol Stein, get it. Great book.
Pardon me, that book was called Stein.
Stein on Writing. And this is a guy who, I can't remember his publishing credits, but he edited some of the biggest books of the 70s and 80s, something like that. He's been in the game a long time. Very concise, very good book on the technical end of writing. There's a guy who, my computer right here, I can look him up. Telling me this about giving them information. There's a guy who writes something called the Snowflake Method. Anybody heard of it? A couple of nods. If you Google the Snowflake Method, you will find it. And he is very good. And he recommends a book that I unfortunately can't think of, but it talks about how to structure books. And this is what I've been lately working on, and it talks about scenes and two sorts of scenes and sequels. Okay, help people. Basically, what they say is that the guy who does the Snowflake Method is referencing another author whose book you can get, and I recommend. I haven't bought it yet because I've been doing too much else. I haven't had time to read it. But in his course, he goes through and what is this guy? This is going to kill me. But Randy Ingermanson, something like that. AdvancedFictionWriting.com is his website. And then this book he recommends talks about the scenes in the sequel. The idea is you have a scene wherein a character experiences, he has a plan, he tries to implement that plan, and there's a disaster. That's what happens in the scene. A sequel is the reaction to the disaster, the consideration of what to do next, and the formulation of a new plan. And he says that's how, you know, when you're writing the book, if you do that, you're going to have some fairly solid work because it'll flow. He also says that you break down an individual scene or sequel. You break down into various sentences. You have what he calls MMU, motivation, MRU, motivation reaction unit, which is I'm walking down the road, a tiger drops in front of me. Okay, what happens? Well, I see the tiger. That's a reaction that takes no time. I feel fear. That's a reaction that takes no cognition. And then I start to decide whether I'm going to run or whatever I'm going to do. I pull a gun. And he says that's the order that things have to happen. When you have a book and something happens to your character, they first have to experience it through their senses. And at which point, there's no time for reaction at this point. This is all happening literally instantaneously. Once you have that, then your character can react emotionally. Fear, strength, whatever emotion they're undergoing based on what's happening, that has a chance to happen to them. And then they can actually think, speak, any of those kinds of things. He said, it's not such a big deal until you get those out of order. But people read it, it feels wrong. So I'd recommend you read that. I tell you what, I've been trying to apply that in my fiction. It's hard. But I see where he's going with it. It is very useful. It makes your characters feel more organic.
So would that be more what an editor would look for? Is, hey, this stuff's out of order? If you're an editor?
It depends on how good your editor is. I suspect that your editor would say it feels wrong. A lot of times editors won't give you hyper-specific comments because their job is not to rewrite the book for you, although I have had editors rewrite sections. I've had editors rewrite paragraphs because then they didn't like the paragraph. They figured it wasn't worth sending back to me just to rewrite that paragraph. Because I've been reading on it, I didn't write that. But go back to my original. No, that's not what I wrote. And these techniques are very advanced techniques. This is the kind of stuff that... Oh, in fact, that's the book, Techniques of the Selling Writer. That's the book I'm trying to think of. That's the one that talks about scenes and sequels and motivation reaction methods. That's the kind of stuff that people who really want to put the effort into their craft will do, and the people who won't. And it's hard, let me tell you. I basically took a year off trying out my game. And just doing the scenes and sequel stuff was a nightmare. But the nice thing is, the outline of the story I'm currently working on is the tightest, most focused, best flowing outline I've ever written. It's incredible. I can see the difference in spending the effort to learn what a scene was, what a sequel was, why they needed to be where they were, and how to use them. And that wasn't the only thing I took time doing, but that was incredibly useful. And that was the next step in my process, by the way. Once I've got my characters written down, or as much as I can, I'll go through the outline and I'll start breaking it into scenes and sequels. And that will tell me, oh, I've got three sequels here. I got this guy thinking, I got these other guys thinking, I got these other guys thinking. That's going to be slow. I need action. That's what scenes are action, sequels are reaction. So you have to put some scenes in there. Now you've got to throw in some action. I was amazed how well that fixed flow problems in a story. You know, the flow problems are... Like, oh man, it's a time when you're watching a movie and you look at your watch. That's a flow problem. The moment you look at your watch, that movie has just experienced a flow problem because it failed to hold your attention long enough to keep you from looking at your watch. Books have the same problem. And the real problem with book flow problems is that they're in your first few chapters. You absolutely cannot have a flow problem in your first few chapters because that is usually the only shot you get to get published. If they look at your first few chapters and they're bored, you're gone. They'll chuck you right out of the slush pile. So fast. And again, this is what editors usually will catch. You know, this is slow, this is boring. They might not say this is a flow problem, but that's a little inside baseball. But hey, you know, if you're a writer, that's what it is. So, I'm sorry, you give me talking, I'll ramble off on any old subject. So,
isn't that what this panel is all about, though?
It is, but I try to focus my rambling as much as possible. So as not to waste people's time, you know. That's the most rambled on about flow. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Oh, wait a minute. We had a question over here.
Who is this one of your
agents? My agent is a guy,
His name's Joe Bagadonis?
No. My agent's a good guy. He's been not as helpful as I might have liked, so I'm not sure I would recommend him. But his name's Ethan Ellenberg, by the way. Ethan Ellenberg Literary Agency. He seems to know his stuff very well. So I'm not sure if he and I just don't click, or if maybe my game isn't good enough for him yet. I mean, he took me on as a client. But I cheated. I got there's. You want to know how to get an agent? I will. Normally, when I tell people about how I got into writing, and I'm not going to tell you that story because it's too long. I will tell them. I will preface it with this caveat: if you talk to any number of writers, you will find that many number of stories about how they got into writing. There's no such thing as a writer that I've ever seen where two people got into the business the same way. The reason for that is I personally believe that once somebody gets into the business a certain way, the universe forever locks that way up. You must find a different way in. But there's an infinite number of ways in, so it's not like you're really being reduced. I've never heard two authors have the same story. How did you get into writing? It's always different. So if you hear somebody's story about how they got into writing, don't think that's the way you're getting into writing. But, I lost my train of thought.
How'd you get your agent?
Thank you. Somebody's... caffeine this morning, my brain still hasn't kicked in. I got my agent by, and this is something you can all do. Anybody who does this will get an agent, I guarantee it. I went out to Wizards of the Coast, I sent them a Dragonlance story that I had written, which was really terrible. And the story, not the sending of the story. But, and the editor there, the head editor wrote me back and said, I can tell you can write, but this story is terrible. Go away and learn what you're doing and then come back. And we had a little discussion about that because he told me I was doing some things wrong, and I pushed back and said, well, your man told me to do this. The guy who I talked to, and so we got into it, and never do that, by the way. I tell it to published authors, read what? I didn't know any better. I was a stupid kid. So I pushed back a little bit. This is part of the, you know, you will not get into writing this way, so I'm warning you now. Don't tell an editor that they're wrong. But this guy apparently liked my style because I was very non-confrontational in my, thank you very much for telling me off and here's why you're wrong, letter. So he said, okay, I'll give you a chance. I'll send you over, we'll put an anthology book together, and I'll send you over there and you can write a short story for us. So I went over, and after some back and forth with the editor, I wrote a short story for him. And it got published in a book called Dragons of the War of Souls. Terrible title. They then said, we're starting this young adult book line. Would you be interested in writing for that? Twist fire, go ahead. And so they gave me a contract. And I went to, before I signed the contract, I went and I had done my research. I'd gotten Writer's Market's Guide to Literary Agents, which is a subversion of their big honking FOMO. And it has in it everything you ever want to know about an agent. I would recommend if you're looking for an agent, you get this book. You can find it at the library, you don't buy it, it's expensive. But if you're going to mark it up like I did, you might want to buy it. And I went through the highlighter, and I'm like, every agent that does science fiction or fantasy, every agent that does, that will take new writers, agents who have, and then they'll tell you how many clients they have and how many books they got sold in the last year. And I was looking for at least a 1-to-1 ratio or as close as I could get. Ethan Ellenberg had almost a 2-to-1 ratio. So it was, it was 1.5-to-1, something like that. He sold a lot of books for his stable of authors. And so he was actually the top guy on my list, and I had, then you look up their submission guidelines, what they want to see, and he was the only guy that would take an electronic submission. This is, you know, back closer to 2001, 2002, something like that. So I had a query letter that I had developed with an author friend of mine who's a romance novel writer down in Provo. Guy writes historical romance novels, makes tons of money. I'm in the wrong biz. But anyway, he helped me write my query letter. And I had printed it up, and I electronically sent it off to Ethan Ellenberg. And I had printed up a bunch for my top, I had my top five picks, who I thought were the best agents that, based on my search criteria, which I just told you, where, you know, who's taking new writers, who's actually selling books, that sort of thing. And by the time I had the other letters in envelopes, he had responded saying, send me a sample of your work. And so I did, and we talked, and he wanted to represent me. And the reason he wanted to represent me, I think, primarily is I had a book under contract. Well, it wasn't a contract, I signed it. But you do that, anybody will sign you. Because that's money they don't have to work for, A, and you've already proven you can get a book. You're already a viable property. Now, you know, like me, I haven't made him a whole lot of money since he signed me. But, you know, he hasn't had to do a whole lot of work for me either. So it's I've sold most of my own books because I was working with Wizards of the Coast. And it was a matter of, hey, you want me to do a new book for you? So. And again, I was the guy who was easy to work with and who always hit the deadline. So when they needed the book written, I was easy to work with. They wanted to work with me if they had work that needed to be done. Their Dragonlance line, I think, is shut down now for a couple of months. So I called them recently about doing another book for them. I'm like, can't do it right now. But they're like, call us back because they like working with me because I'm easy to work with. Have I stressed that one enough? So yeah, if you get a book under contract. And that's not as easy as it sounds, and it doesn't sound easy. But if you can do that, you can get an agent just like that. If you want to get an agent the hard way, or the regular way, I should say, I cheated, but I did get a lucky break there. And you'll all get lucky breaks somewhere. Mine just came there. Go to Worldcon. Go to any big convention. Don't go to DragonCon. It's more of a fan con. You won't find a lot of editors and agents there. Just people dressed as Klingons. But hey, it's a fan con, right? But Worldcon is a pro con. It's for professionals. And if you go there or to pretty much any other major con, BaltCon, NorwestCon, things like some of the larger ones, you will find. In fact, last time I went to NorwestCon, I talked with Tom Doherty. He's the head of the tour. I mean, I chatted with him. My agent knows him. And my agent said, "Go and mention my name and chat with him." That's what I did. And thank you. And that's where you will find editors and agents. And if you find them, and you... Who here knows what an elevator proposition is? Okay. This is something you're going to need to know. It's called a two-minute pitch. And it's also known as the elevator pitch. And this is the ability to concisely relate. When somebody says, "Oh, you're a writer. What's your story about?" As anybody who's an editor or an agent will, because that's what they do. What they want to hear is something that you can tell them about what your story is about in less time than it takes the elevator to get from the ground floor to whatever room or whatever floor their hotel room is on. 2 minutes is the max that this has to take. Now, I have, unfortunately, since I'm not actually pitching my current story, I have not worked on my elevator pitch, but I could probably give it 2 minutes. Steampunk story about a kid who's trying to find his parents through a crystal that his mother made that's very special. He gets stolen, he chases it down, and fights a megalomaniacal bad guy. Not very exciting, because it's not very polished. But you need to take whatever your story's about, polish it up, 2 minutes, 2 sentences. You know, it has to be short. If you can do that, when the agent says, "What's your story about?" and you say, "It's about X, Y, and Z," and you stop, that's going to impress them. They're going to say, "Oh, a professional. Somebody who's not going to spend the next hour telling me what his story is about." Yeah, don't be that guy. Editors and agents don't like that guy.
Yeah. I was talking to Paul last night, asking what his story is about. He's got his own voice he uses when he's giving his elevator speech.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But if you go to cons to meet these people, you need cards. Mine have my professional works. There's all my published books. They're right there. And the dates they were published. Well, yeah, this one actually is an old card. It says that Survivor was published in October of 2008. It's actually November of 2008. But have cards. Have your email address. If you have a website, your website on it. I mean, I put Howard Taylor did this wonderful caricature of me, which looks better when I actually have my goatee. But I recently lost a bunch of weight, so I was taking pictures, so I cut my goatee off. Hopefully I'll lose some more weight. But as I take the next phase of this diet, I'm on. But But have a, if you've got a picture, use it on your card. If you have, I've heard a story of a guy who would go to these cons and talk to agents and editors, and he would say, because editors, what will happen is if they like you, if they like your pitch, they'll say, send me your pitch, your chapters in your outline, or send me a query, or send me something. Whatever they tell you to send, that's what you send. You always write on it, as, you know, I met you at NorwestCon, and as you requested, here is blah, 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 blah. That way they know who you are and why you are sending them, why you are bothering them with snail mail. The other thing is, this guy used to say, after the guy said, oh, well, I'd love to see a sample of your work, he said, well, remember, I'm the guy who looks like Pavarotti. I guess it was a guy who looked like Pavarotti. And so he would open his letters with, hi, I'm the guy who looks like Pavarotti. Guess what? Editors remembered him. Because he was the guy who looked like Pavarotti. If you've got something that is memorable, and again, I use this great caricature because it's memorable. You know, people look at that, and like I said, it works better when I have my goatee, but it sells it. Have a card, link to your website, link to your email address, make sure it's correct. Don't put a lot of other information on there, they don't need it, if you're at just at a con. And get their information, get what they want, and send them stuff. And like I said, when I talked about polish earlier, make sure you've polished up your submission. 3 chapters and an outline is a submission. I've heard outlines should be 5 pages, I've heard 10 pages, I've heard 15 pages. So ask them if you care. They probably won't, because they're not going to read your outline unless they like your first 2 chapters. And if they like your first 2 chapters, they're not going to care how long your outline is. Plain and simple. Nice cover letter, because their secretary will get this before they do. And the cover letter needs to say, you know, we met at NorwestCon, or wherever they met, and you requested that I send this to you. And then the secretary goes, oh, this is something my boss wants to see. Don't lie. Let's see, they were at NorwestCon. Yeah, that's when she had botulism and was sick. You lying rat bastard. Don't find out. So, you never lie. That gets around. You know, if you're the schlub who's trying to, you know, deceive people. They all know each other. They all talk. So, yeah, don't become that guy. You'll get blacklisted. Go faster. Yes, that's how you meet editors and agents. That's how you will get on their good side and get them to want to see your material. The industry right now is just, they're actually doing very well. Historically, I think Barnes & Noble had its best quarter that it's had in a long time, last quarter. But historically, entertainment business, like movies and writing, do real well in depressions and recessions. So, but panic makes them all, you know, back off initially. So hopefully that means that there will be some opening in the market soon. But I don't know, right now things are a little tight, so you just got to make sure you, whatever you're submitting is the best it can be. And I think I'm out of time, so keep waiting. But anyway, if you've got other questions, I'll be around. Feel free to come ask me. I'm verbose. But oh, come get a card if you want me to send you my character analysis, and I'll send you also a list of